live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network. Again, go to TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, and also LinkedIn, Neil Haley. And you can also check out G.J. Reynolds at SimplyG.com. And I'm really excited to have a NASCAR star on the program, and a really big-time NASCAR star, Mike Wallace. Mike, thanks for calling, and you're going to educate me on NASCAR because we're going to learn about your life in the first segment, but again, I'm still learning the whole NASCAR thing, so thanks for calling.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, and be happy to explain a little bit. NASCAR is actually a big thing. You know, it's one of the largest spectator sports in America and one of the greatest forms of motorsports in the world right now, so we're excited to be part of it. I've been lucky enough to be part of it for many years now. I have an older brother, Rusty Wallace, who's a champion in the series, a younger brother, Kenny, and we've got a son and a daughter, Matt and Chrissy, who are trying to race. So pretty big in the Wallace family.
Absolutely. You have a definite family tradition in the Wallace family. So let's talk about growing up. Did you always want to be a race car driver, or was it just you had to with this the family and everything?
Well, you know, it's rather unique because my father, Russ Wallace, was a race car driver by hobby. He never made a living at it. He just did it on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and we'd travel to the racetrack with Dad. You know, we raced within about a 100-mile radius of the St. Louis area, and, you know, I don't think there was ever a day early on that we actually thought we would make a living driving race cars. It was something that was just fun, kind of a fun hobby, and it progressed from there. I mean, we used to sell snow cones and sodas and that at the racetrack. We used to be little concession guys. We watched Dad race, and we'd sort of help the racetrack out and selling quarter cokes and stuff like that. And as age progressed on, when I say age, back in the day, you had to be 16 years old to drive a race car. Well, now today, just if you can walk, you can drive a race car in different forms of racing, whether it's go-kart racing, quarter midgets, whatever. So, as we all cycled through the age of 16 in St. Louis, we started racing. My older brother Rusty did, and then myself and Kenny. And, you know, I don't know that we were destined to be race car drivers, but we were fortunate enough to be drivers. And it just turned out well now over, you know, we've been doing this for 21 years now, making a living at it. So it's pretty cool.
Well, we definitely, on your website, we can see how many the prize winnings for your career in racing, which is amazing. And so basically, through this process, the Wallace family, you said it was a struggle at times in certain things. Were you passionate about it as much as you think Rusty was to be a race car driver? I mean, thinking of growing up with Rusty and all the different things, was this something you said, there's no other idea, this is the career I wanted?
Well, now, you know, I myself actually worked in my uncle's vacuum cleaner and janitorial supply business for many years. Actually ran the business. It was a large business in St. Louis, Missouri. And, you know, racing's hard to do. It's not just one day you wake up and say, well, I'm going to be a race car driver, and that's what I want to do. It takes a lot of cost investment into your career. You got to, you know, get sponsorships to help fund the programs that you're doing. This is a battle we still struggle in today's world. But I think it was kind of a little bit later in life, honestly. I decided I wanted to try to race for a living. And, you know, Rusty had become a success in the NASCAR world. My younger brother, Kenny, had got an opportunity because he'd worked with Rusty quite a bit. And then I said one day, look, I'm pretty good at this. I know that I am. And if I don't try to do it, if I don't try to pursue this dream, I'll be miserable my whole life. And I was fortunate enough that I had a very supportive wife, or have a very supportive wife, Carla, that said, you know, if that's what you need to do, I'm behind you on it. And we moved from St. Louis, Missouri to Concord, North Carolina area, which is just a suburb of Charlotte. And at the same time, made an agreement with my uncle, not really an agreement. I told him I wanted to take off for the summer and go racing. And I couldn't believe it. He wouldn't let me do that. He said, oh, no, you got to work. I said, well, I got to live this dream to figure out if I'm going to make it or not. I said, I'll make you a deal. If it doesn't work, I'll be back in November and I'll quit racing for good and commit myself to the business, or I'm going to quit the business, go racing full time. And he goes, no, you don't have that option. So I couldn't believe it, but I quit my job. And thank God, really, that he forced my hand on that, because everything fell apart in November, and I would have been back in St. Louis working a regular job, never had a career in racing had I probably not been forced into that corner. But it's all turned out well now, and sometimes you don't know why things are, you know, make you do it in a certain way, but I'm fortunate it turned out.
Well, it definitely seems like you were fortunate it turned out. And what age did you decide to do this? So this is a story that, again, if you go on your website, you see the great career that you had so far and how you continue to have a good career. But to start racing later, I mean, you did it for fun. You would consider yourself like a weekend warrior, right? Kind of like...
I was a very good weekend warrior, won a lot of races on a weekend basis, worked a regular job Monday through Friday, you know, 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 every day, and those type of things. And you know, now we've been able to do it for all these years, and still able to do it. You know, the biggest challenge we have in today's world, different than before, sponsorship dollars are very hard to come by. It's hard to get to the right decision makers within a corporation. And what we have is a real valued marketing tool. It's just getting someone that you can get their attention to them to listen to.
Exactly, because again, people's dollars, especially businesses, are like, you know, well, I have this to spend for this and that, but I want to jump back into specifically at that point when you're about to make the leap of faith in so many ways, Mike, because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to quit my job to try to be like Rusty. And how difficult was it when you were in your career working to see Rusty so successful in racing when you all were weekend warriors at one point? Was that tough for you, or was it like, you know, I could do the same thing, or it was just you're
rooting
for him?
I don't know if I ever actually took him to the point and said, well, I can do what he can do or whatever. I knew how he'd come up in the race world. And he of course, has had a Hall of Fame career. And we'll never match those numbers, but I've won plenty of races now. I'm a contender when we do race to win races, and you just want to be successful. You just want to. Everybody asks me, well, were you trying to be like your brother or whatever? Sure, I would love to win a championship and love to be one of NASCAR's 50 greatest drivers, but not everybody can be a superstar. But when you can be a star, and I consider we're at least at that level, and won major races, Daytona, Talladega, and, you know, various racetracks around the country, that you're a pretty elite group. You know, we line these race cars up on every Saturday or Sunday we race. There's only 40 people in the whole world that get to do it on that given day. And I've been part of that elite 40, 43 drivers for 20 years now.
That's
so
huge, Mike. I mean, just think, let's just talk about that compared to other sports. That's like you being in the NBA for that many years. And, you know, you weren't a journeyman. You were winning, but you weren't like the superstar. You weren't the Michael Jordan. You weren't the LeBron James. But yet you were a very big contributor in this sport. And that's the thing you have to look at in the competition factor in being an individual sport. It's kind of like in professional golfing, to be able to get become a PGA golfer. You got to be one of the million and look at the decision you made and the success. So you have to be commended for that for sure.
Well, thank you very much. And yeah, it's I kind of conversation there a little earlier when I was talking about having the opportunity to race and my uncle not giving me a chance to do it. You know, had he said, okay, you could come back, I'd been back in St. Louis because things all went bad that year. But the end result, there's only a couple superstars in every type of sports.
Right.
Maybe the word a couple is a little thin, but there's only a few superstars in every sporting arena. And then there's just people that are very competitive that are stars in the sport. And I consider myself, fortunately, one of those type of people, you know, we all use Michael Jordan as a name, we use Tiger Woods in the golf world, you know, LeBron James and things of that nature. But there's only going to be one or two of those guys in any given year or any period of a career. And but when you can have longevity in a sport, I was shocked. I have three diagonally across the street from where I live. That there's three former Carolina Panthers players that live over there, and I come to find out the average career of a football player is 3.5 years.
It is, yeah.
I was stunned by that. I was just absolutely blown away. And it's like you tell me, yeah. So you take all the players and average out is 3.5 years, and I've been able to do this for this many years, and but it takes a lot of work, dedication, commitment, passionate about the sport, about the opportunities to drive race cars for a living. The other fun things that come along with it, besides living your dream as a winning race car driver, you know, I had the pleasure to go to Iraq with General Myers when he was a chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff and spend a week over there over the holidays 2 years back, and just get to do a lot of really cool things because of what you do for a living. And that we've had success at it. But I can certainly assure you none of this has been easy. There's a lot of pleasure and a lot of enjoyment and a lot of rewards out of it. But there's a lot of mental challenges, a lot of physical challenges to be successful, not just in the motorsports world, but any form of a sporting world.
All right, we're talking to Mike Wallace, NASCAR superstar, and definitely in my phase, especially the top 40 in so many ways. But let's go. I mean, you definitely have to write a book, Mike. I keep telling people when I interview somebody and I say, this looks like a story, absolutely a story, to quit your job and say, okay, I'm going to move. And at that point, did Rusty support that whole thing, or the whole Wallace family saying, you know what, we think he can do this, meaning the people that were driving in the Carolina region when you decided to go and say, I'm going to make the move? Did they say, hey, I can do this, or what was your thought process?
No, you're kind of on a limb by yourself, honestly. You know, Rusty, even though he's my brother, he had his own career on. A lot of focus was around him. He's been supportive, but never per se goes out of his way to make anything, you know, make it happen easier. And there is nothing to make it happen easier. You got to produce on your own. And in today's world, let me give you a little backtracking. I mean, I was 31 years old when I came racing full time.
Right.
I mean, today that is an old man. You know, you got to almost start when you're 8 to 10 years old. When you're 18, you've done got 10 years of experience under your belt in today's world. So that's how times have changed in the motorsports world. And, you know, there's contributing factors to that. You could see it happening back when young Jeff Gordon just started racing, and everybody wanted their child or grandson or whatever to be a superstar. So they've all tried to do it. But we'll always equate back. There's still only so many spots on a given race. To be a competitor and to be part of that week in, week out is fun, but it is a challenge. And you got to be passionate about what you're doing. And, you know, the ups and downs of the business side of the sport it's not for the faint of heart, as they say.
No, it's not. Anything in the entertainment world, Mike, that pays well but yet has tons of fans, has so much competition. And I guess the growth of NASCAR from 20 years ago to today is amazing. As you said, it's the number one sport in the United States. And people still in certain areas don't understand that. The magnitude of places in the South or in the areas where NASCAR is huge. It's so gigantic. It's unlike, you know, you could talk about the Super Steelers in Pittsburgh and how everyone is a Steeler fan. Imagine going to Concord, North Carolina, and how many fans are NASCAR fans? Almost everyone in the whole town. And in Charlotte, same deal. That's the type of magnitude that this sport has brought. And so when we get back, I want to really go into specifically with Mike, I guess, his big break. I mean, he goes out to North Carolina, taking the biggest chance of his life, and his uncle doesn't want him to do it. And then when you get there, the opportunities, your success, and what goals do you have now? Because, again, in NASCAR, you can keep driving for a lot much longer than, like we said, the NFL career, 3 or 3.5 years. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and I'm with Mike Wallace, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network. You can go to simplyg.com to find out more information on G.J. Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior, and I'm with Mike Wallace, NASCAR celebrity superstar, and I'm enjoying the conversation I'm having with him because, again, he chose something 20 years ago that a lot of people wouldn't take that chance. They wouldn't give up things, especially his wife supporting him and some of his family supporting him. So once you got there, you said it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And this is where you're going to educate me more on NASCAR. I learn about all these different sports. But honestly, this is not a sport I sit down and watch. And now I will, because I'm friends with Mike Wallace. So I'm going to have to say, check him out and learn more about the sport. So when I get a chance to talk to you again, I'll have a little bit more sports knowledge. Like, I have NFL knowledge, I have Major League Baseball, and I definitely have professional wrestling knowledge. But when it comes to this sport, I'm just learning. So when you get there and you take your chance, you said sponsorship's a key, because you got to have enough money for your car to kind of have the team around you and everything to be successful, right? That's one major thing, is getting sponsors.
Yeah, that is a major situation. There was an old racer by the name of Banjo Matthews back in the early days of NASCAR racing. He used to make a phrase that he sold parts and pieces for race cars. He goes, "Money buys speed. How fast do you want to go?" And that's just how it is today. You know, the race world compares to any other major, you know, sporting venue, whether you get the New York Yankees, the Pittsburgh Steelers, whatever. You got to have revenue to be able to pay good players and coaches and facilities to train in and so forth. And what we are, we're not just a sporting venue. We're not just race car drivers only. We also are marketing individuals. We help companies brand their name, brand their, you know, their company in a way that, in a positive light. They use the programs for employee morale, employee recruitment within their companies. And so we're not just a single facet individual or a team. We race race cars for the thrill and the excitement of racing, but we also offer a service to corporate America to help them, you know, identify their brands and, again, employee morale, employee recruitment. You talk about Pittsburgh. I was excited that last year, a friend of mine, Chris Cagle, sang the national anthem at the alumni game, the Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens last year. So I got to come to the Steelers Stadium. I was awed at the support and the fan morale and enthusiasm at a Steelers game, not being at many live ball games before, but my gosh, you talk about Steeler Nation. That was something it was awing to me about how supportive the fan base is there. You know, we go to the Carolina Panthers game here in Charlotte at times, and we don't have anything of that type of a fan base for the Carolina Panthers here.
Well, absolutely. So once you go in out and get sponsorship, then it comes with skill too, right? So you have the money to drive the car, and then you need to have the agility and ability to be successful driver after that, right?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there's you got to have raw talent. You got to understand how to drive a race car, how to drive a race car fast, how to be able to finish races. You know, we're racing 300 and 500 mile events. It's not like we're running a little short, you know, 100 mile races or anything like that. So you got to know when to race, when not to race, when to log laps, and a lot of that comes with experience. You know, we've crashed plenty of race cars in our career, but the smarter you get, the wiser you get, the cost that you know that's there, you try to take and become a professional. I think that's probably the best way to say it, is that when you first start, you're trying to live a passion, whether it's driving race cars, whether it's any other sport, you're doing it because that's what you want to do. Then you got to figure out how to become really good at it. Some people, it comes just simple natural talent. I've been fortunate, and that's, I think it's natural talent on my end or from our family side also. It's not like we, you know, worked incredibly hard to just become really good at. We just kept getting better because we're able to be in the sport for a long period of time. But, you know, the sports world of NASCAR racing is contributed by a lot of people. You know, they always say teamwork stands for together, everyone achieves more. So not do we just have a good race car driver. It starts with a good ownership of a race team and good crew chief and good technical people working on the team and good fabricators. And, you know, there's a lot of people that work on a race team. And honestly, the driver and maybe the crew chief get the exposure out of it more so than anybody. But it takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication, a lot of understanding from a driver's standpoint. I'm just not a race car driver. I mentioned earlier about a marketing person, but I got to understand what that race car is doing.
Right.
You know, you got to be able to relate that to your crew and figure out how, what type of adjustments you make to the car to make it run faster, run better, run longer at a higher rate of speed. And the uniqueness of what our business and our sport is, and we were we kind of got on this conversation within the garage area in the last year or so, that we're actually one of the few major sporting venues in the world that don't really have coaches. I don't have a driver coach.
Right.
The chief doesn't have a crew chief coach, or we don't have a team coach. You know, it's kind of you're working as a team and everybody assembles all good. I was watching a football game last night. They're talking about the defensive, you know, the line, the coach for the defense, the coach for the offense, special teams coach. I'm thinking, wow, these guys got a lot of help to be good. You know, and as advanced as our business and the sport is, a lot of it is done as a team, but individuals excelling at what they do. And it's a little different nature than other sporting venues.
It definitely is, and I'm learning from this. So when, again, if we go back, bring you back for a second to your career, and then what was your biggest break? When did you know, hey, I'm going to compete, I'm going to be in this game for a long period of time? Once you made the leap of faith, you head out to North Carolina, you get the sponsorship you need, you start racing. What win kind of said, hey, you know what, I'm going to be in this sport for a while?
Well, what the uniqueness was about when I finally given up working in St. Louis, moved down, ran a few races, finished third, my first race ever, you know, professional race ever, finished third. Then I, during the winter, a family friend and fellow racer, Kenny Schrader, he's also from St. Louis. We all live in the same area now. We were at an event together, and he says, hey, I got an ARCA car. How about, you got any interest in running Daytona for me? I was like, oh, without a doubt. And I went to Daytona in 1994, and I won the ARCA race. So I won at Daytona. You know, that's a huge deal. And then a week later, I got a phone call wanting to know if I had any interest in driving a cup car for Junie Donlevy, the number 90 car. And there's like, here's my ultimate dream is playing out. How did this happen? How did it all work so well? But winning at Daytona is what catapulted me to the opportunity to get the breaks I get today and had over the 20 years. And, you know, then I was able to go back and win at Daytona two other times. So I've won three different types of cars, three races there. And then just leads you into other wins. And the racing is like everything else. You're only as good as your last performance, and you got to perform to stay in the sport. And so we've been fortunate enough to win, you know, an average amount of races and be considered a fine person in what we do on and off the racetrack. And but Daytona 1994 was the career changer that made everything that I was trying to do and, you know, kind of thought everything was bad because we'd quit our job. I had everything that every common person in life wants. I had a nice, stable job, paid really good money, nice benefits, vehicle to drive, all the stuff. And then deciding to change that, and I look back at it now, my wife, with her support, I still today think about how caring she was to say, well, you need to live your dream if that's what you want to do. And then to have pictures, I look back at them, her standing in victory lane with tears running out of her eyes. And we look at each other and say, it's all worth it, you know. So
absolutely. What was your biggest win? Which one would be like your big trophy that you could sit down and say, hey, this is the one I'm Mike Wallace, I won so-and-so.
I think there's special things in sports. And they always say when you win an inaugural, the first ever, there will never be a first ever. Somebody else might win it the next year. But I won the inaugural truck race in 2000 at Daytona International Speedway. The trucks are, you know, one of the top three touring series in the NASCAR world. And I was able to, it was a 100-lap race, 250-mile race, and I led about 70 laps of the race, lost the lead, getting the white flag, got all the way back to fifth, going down the back straightaway. I was able to draft up past cars and trucks, and I won the race coming off turn four. And that was in NASCAR's history books, I won the inaugural truck race at Daytona. I was watching a Fox broadcast just not too long ago, and they were talking about the 10 highest highlights of NASCAR truck racing, and I'm number is had me as number one.
You definitely mentioned the right one then.
yeah, I did, and then you know, that's the race that kind of really made a statement in the world, because it was a great race. It was a very competitive race. It was the first time trucks had ever been at Daytona. You know, we ran 200 mile an hour in a draft pack together. Nobody would ever thought of a pickup truck per se. I mean, the race cars with truck bodies on them, but would run 200 mile an hour at Daytona, and we did. But then every other win is so important to me. Back in 94, when, you know, these opportunities, when I first started in the sport, you know, I won Milwaukee, I won Dover, won Raceway Park, winning races on the last lap. But the ones that really stick in your mind, got the coolest trophies from, all that, is Daytona.
So when you say you race for NASCAR, are there different divisions? Kind of explain that to me. When you're a NASCAR racer, like, how's that work?
Yeah, so basically the word NASCAR is an acronym that stands for the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing. That's what NASCAR stands for. And there's three major touring divisions. The first one is the Sprint Cup Series. Of course, the Sprint Cup comes from Sprint, the telecommunications company. That's the sponsor. Sprint Communications is a sponsor of the Sprint Cup Series. So that is, you know, the biggest purses, the biggest television exposure is in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. And then you step right below it, racing at the same racetracks as the Sprint Cup Series. That's the NASCAR Nationwide Series. Nationwide is from Nationwide Insurance.
Yes.
So it's the Nationwide Series. And the third one in that list is the Camping World Truck Series. A lot of the same races run Daytona, Talladega, all that, but it's racing trucks. And, you know, trucks being like pickup trucks, but again, they're race cars with truck bodies on them. So those are the three major touring series of NASCAR. Then NASCAR has what they call the regional touring series that run a lot of local racetracks around the country. And it really comes right down to it. That's where I really got my start to get the opportunity to go NASCAR Nationwide racing and Sprint Cup racing. Is in 1990, I won the NASCAR Mid-America region. I got the country divided in regions. I won 21 out of 26 races that year. And, you know, got my tie, if you want to call it a tie, or name recognition to NASCAR. And at that time, R.J. Reynolds was the sponsor of the series. People knew who you were because you were racing in NASCAR. And so that's, you know, how you get that exposure. And you start at a local basis and hopefully get recognized. And our sport's a little different. It's not like there's scouts out there watching every racer around the country. You know, if you're good at it, you try to get an opportunity to go somewhere where somebody can see you race. The nice stories about most of us in the motorsports world is we're all champions somewhere on a local basis.
Right.
And we're able to elevate ourselves to an opportunity to race, if you want to call it the big show. You know, if we were playing baseball, we'd say we made it to the big show. And then did something well enough to impress people along the way that you stayed in the big show.
And so the big show is the Sprint Cup or the Nationwide?
Yeah. That is the Sprint Cup series, yes. It's kind of hard to explain how big the Nationwide series is, though. It's a huge sport. It's a huge business. So all three were very large. All of them are very live national television for every event. But if you say you made it to the top, which we have, and is the Sprint Cup Series at this present time, I'm racing the NASCAR Nationwide Series on a full-time basis. And people go, well, don't you want to go Sprint Cup racing? It's like, yes, I do. You know, I'd like to go back Sprint Cup racing. But it takes a large financial investment. And teams and drivers all work together jointly. A lot of times, you know, drivers can get the opportunity to present it where a company wants to sponsor them, and then they can take that sponsorship to a Sprint Cup or a Nationwide or truck team. Kind of just depends what kind of money you can come up with. It's an odd business that even though you're in it for a long period of time, you've got to continue to help raise revenue to keep the sport alive or keep the race teams alive. A little different, not a little, a whole lot different than, you know, baseball or football or whatever, but you primarily go out and you're judged on your talent alone, and it's the league's and the franchise's responsibility to find the revenue to make those teams operate.
So how long were you in Spring Cup for, Mike? Was that in the...
Well, I ran the Spring Cup Series starting in 1994, and I raced it every race consistently through 2006. And then I ran the Spring Cup races, you know, five or six a year from then on. I did not run any Spring Cup races in 2013 at all. We're hoping to put an opportunity together, possibly to go to Daytona in 2014 and at least race a Daytona in the Spring Cup Series. But we do have a full-time program with Johnny Davis, JD Motorsports, to run the Nationwide Series car all again in 2014. Team still today is looking for additional sponsorship dollars to make it be what it needs to be. So we'll continue down the path to try to win races in the Nationwide Series. We'll go to Daytona with a shot to win the race. And, you know, the cup opportunities. And when I'm talking money, just to kind of understand what we're talking about, to run a good Sprint Cup Series race team on a yearly basis costs between $18 and $20 million a year.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, and then a Nationwide Series car is between $5 and $6 million a year. So we're not talking little chump change.
Right.
You know, we're talking serious money. But what we have to offer, again, is that we are a viable tool to any individual, any corporation that wants to make and needs help on marketing, branding, advertising, employee programs, customer programs. We're a great tool for it. Forbes magazine has been quoted year after year saying NASCAR racing is the best bang for the buck in sponsorship dollars.
Because they support the NASCAR fans support the sponsors.
The NASCAR fans, totally documented by numerous research groups, the NASCAR fans are 74% brand loyal. You know, so that's an incredibly, incredibly high number compared to other sports in the country. I mean, I take 100 people, 74 of those people will buy the products that they see on race cars because they understand how the sport works.
Wow.
And that's how, you know, why people get involved in and corporations get involved in. End result, everybody's looking for a return on their investment. Yeah. And so we got to be able to prove that to them. And, you know, sometimes it's easy to prove. Sometimes it's a little bit more challenging. But all in all, we know it works good. And, you know, one of our most challenging parts, even with being in sport for as many years as we have been in it, is, as I alluded to early in the conversation, is finding those marketing partners that want to be involved with you.
That keeps you busy, but it keeps you in the sport longer and longer. And, Mike, so you're saying also the series you're on is on national television. For our listeners all over the world, and I guess in the United States, where does it usually air?
On the ABC affiliates or, you know, ESPN, ESPN2 or ABC is what the NASCAR Nationwide Series airs on. That will go through 2014, then starting in 2015, NBC Sports has bought the, you know, has got the license and the agreement to televise races for many years. So starting in 2015, we'll be on NBC Sports. But through 2014, you'll be able to watch the Nationwide Series that I compete in week in, week out on ESPN, ESPN2, or ABC. And then the Sprint Cup Series is divided between Fox and ESPN. So they split the year, basically. The first part of the year, Fox gets it up until July, and then ESPN takes over and finishes it.
So, well, Mike, you absolutely educated me on NASCAR in our time, but where can we find information on you? And our listeners can find info on you and when you're going to be racing again so that they can follow you. I'm going to start following you. I'm going to start being a big fan, and I'll keep my fingers crossed you go back to Sprint Cup and get the opportunity at Daytona. So I'll definitely be looking out for you on that. And you've educated me for sure for people that don't know about NASCAR, so I can educate them. So I appreciate you
that
taking the time.
I just go to MikeWallace.com and you know, www.MikeWallace.com. We're there's a website there that explains a little bit. We're in the process right now of creating a new interactive website. 50 Below, an ARI company who's helping with the new website design, has some cool ideas. So tune in today, see where we're at, and then a month from now, to, you know, stay in touch on the site, and you'll see how cool and interactive we made it. That the fans, we're going to be an information source for race fans, not just for ourselves, but we're going to tell you a lot about the sport, different things that you can tune in and watch for and enjoy and be part of. So we love our fan participation. If it wasn't for the fans of this sport, it wouldn't be, and we wouldn't be where we're all at today. And so we invite everybody to join us week in, week out.
Well, absolutely, Mike. And we need to have, in a couple months, have some of the other Wallace family with you on the show to talk about promoting some of their stuff as well. And so we can continue that PR and keep that relationship going in NASCAR on my show and get NASCAR fans to be listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, especially getting some more NASCAR stars on. So we'll stay in touch. I have your email. I have all your contact info, and I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to me.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure, and let's stay in touch. Let's brief the fans quite a bit throughout the year.
Absolutely, definitely, and somehow maybe we'll get Rusty on. Maybe, possibly, you never know. We'll see. That'd be awesome.
You never know. We'll work on helping make that happen.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Mike, and thanks again for calling the program.
All right, thank you very much.
I take
appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, you're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Player Series. You can go to insightfulplayer.com to find out more information on Chrissy Carew and the wonderful programs that she does. She partners with NFL players that are the most amazing people in the world that are giving back to the community, especially children, and they also perform school assembly. So if you go to insightfulplayer.com, you can purchase Chrissy's book and learn more about her. And I want to welcome the program my co-host Jarrett. And Jarrett, anytime we have an insightful player, we know we're going to have a great conversation.
We have all the time, and each one of these players brings so much to our listeners, to us and our listeners, about what they're passionate about and what they've done outside of their sporting career.
And I want to welcome the program. Insightful player, NFL veteran, played for many different teams and also a star at Penn State. So our local flagship station, if they're Penn State alum, remember him very well. Anthony Adams. Anthony, thanks for calling.
No problem. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. You know, it's getting close to Christmas and New Year's, so, you know, it's the best time of the year for sure. I enjoy the holidays and especially the whole part of giving back. So excited to talk to you and talk about your story for sure and different times. Growing up in Detroit, was it a challenging life living in Detroit, especially as a child?
No question. There was a lot of violence going on, a lot of shootings and a lot of drugs, you know, around my neighborhood and things like that. But my mom did a great job in sheltering me away from that and keeping me active and enrolling me in different programs. So, you know, hats off to my mom for being a single mom in Detroit and growing a young boy up to become a young man. So hats off to my mom.
Well, definitely hats off to your mom. And Jarrett, that's the thing we hear about a lot of the insightful players. Family has been that key component for where they go, for sure, Jarrett.
Oh, well, you know, this is how our show started 4 years ago, was really talking about the important role, the critical role that parents, the adults, and young people's lives play with children and help them grow up into the adults we want them to be.
That's right. The Bible says, train a child up in the way they should go, and he will not depart far from thee. So I'm real instrumental in my kids' lives, taking them to school. This year was the first year that I was able to do all the Father's Day activities and things like that, because I'll always have OTAs or training camp or something like that. So this year has been pretty great for me as far as spending a lot of time with my kids. So.
Well, absolutely. And that's the fun thing of myself being an entrepreneur, Anthony, is before, when I was a school teacher, I couldn't spend as much time with my kids. But being able to have the flexibility, I get to see them all the time. And it's just something that just, oh, it's fantastic. And it really makes you want to wake up each day when you get to be with your kids, for sure.
Yeah. It's, you can't really explain it. It's just, it's a great thing to be a part of their lives and see them grow and see them accomplish and overcome a lot of different things, like being scared of the dark or riding their bike or, you know, tying their shoes. You know, it's great to see them overcome a lot of the things that they're usually scared of.
So we talked about your mom, that your mom raised you alone. Your father, when you were just 4 years old, was went to prison. So that must have, was that difficult not to have that father figure in a way growing up?
Well, it could have been if my mom was bashing him and stuff like that, and, you know, just building up a reason for me to have some type of hatred towards my dad. But she did a good job in telling me all the positive things that my dad did. And he made a mistake, and, you know, he paid for it and went to jail, and now he's out. And, you know, I don't have any animosity towards him or anything. You know, he comes up all the time and, you know, spend some time with his grandkids and stuff like that. Our relationship is great. And, you know, I don't hold any grudges against him because I feel like he paid his price already. So it wouldn't do any good if he came home from prison and then I'm just like, oh, man, you wasn't a good dad and blah, blah, blah. You know, that would tear him to pieces. So instead, you know, I just show him a lot of love, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him.
And that's so great, your forgiveness, Anthony. You have to be definitely commended for forgiving your father for what he did and how he wasn't there for him. And Jarrett, that's the other great thing about these players. They truly are able to forgive others. And that's so key, Jarrett, isn't it?
Well, you know, and here's what I'm hearing right now from Anthony is the role model for him there was his own mother. You know, that there's adversity, and she demonstrated, you know, in a realistic way, you know, showing him every day, you know, we deal with the adversity that we have. You know, we can be bitter, or we could be angry, or we can just approach this as this is an obstacle that we overcome. And you know, how important that is to have an adult model that for a young child. And I just want to ask Anthony, you know, what are some other things that you saw your mother do, your mom do, to really show that we're not going to let this kind of challenge block your ability to move forward?
Well, she would take me out of my environment sometimes and take me to places where a lot of kids were struggling, because I would be like, you know, hey, I don't like the neighborhood that we live in or whatever. She would take me to some real, like, neighborhoods where they were really struggling. And then I would be like, wow, you know, I don't understand why that. You know, I would give you so much grief by saying that, oh, look at the house we live in, look at my clothes or whatever. And so she would always try to find different lessons for me to learn. And she would always put me in different type of programs. I felt like I went to school all year round because I would be in all type of summer school and doing all types of projects and stuff like that. And I'm just like, Mom, goodness, like, can I, you know, go outside and play tag or something? Jeez. But she was great. You know, I learned to appreciate it, you know, as I got older, because I started to realize that she was doing all this stuff by herself and trying to work our jobs and stuff like that, still providing and still buy me the newest Jordans and stuff like that. So, you know, hats off to my mom once again.
Most definitely. So once, you know, you're a good football player, you get accepted to Penn State. And this is something, again, for our listeners out there. Again, I had Bill Prado, who's the on my author show, and he wrote about the resurgence of Penn State after the whole Sandusky thing. Going and playing for the legendary coach Joe Paterno, I want you to talk about how you benefited from this and that what kind of person Joe is. Joe was, because I think that he has been really slighted in so many ways based on allegations, different things. And I know you want to speak out. Mm-hmm. Now you have this platform to do it. So tell us about Joe.
Well, the one thing that I respected about Coach Paterno was the fact that he wanted to build you up as a man first. Like, he could care less about football. When you first got there, he wants to know how your grades are, you know, how's your behavior and all of those types of things. He teaches you all these life lessons, and he calls it the grand experiment, success with honor. It's one thing to be successful, but can you do it by being honored? Can you honor your classroom? Can you honor the way that you present yourself? Can you honor yourself by being punctual? So he had all of these life lessons that he would teach us before we even learned to play. So, for instance, if we had to be somewhere by 8 o'clock, to him, that means you have to be there by 7:44. If you're there at 7:45, then you're considered late. Like, we call that Joe Pot time. So when people say, hey, we got an 8 o'clock meeting, then you know you have to be there by 7:44. If you're there at 7:45.00, then you're late.
I'm sorry, Anthony, I interrupted you, but this seems so simple, but I talked to my own son about this, and when we're offering suggestions to parents and advising parents, I talk about this, the commitment of punctuality. It seems so simple, but by being there on time and being where you're supposed to be even early, it shows a commitment, but it shows respect to the person or the group that you are there to be with.
Exactly. And that's something that, you know, you never really grasp at, you know, 17 or 18 years old, but he'll break it down for you, especially if you're one of those guys who've been late all the time. So his whole thing was, if it's 120 guys on the team, you know, including the walk-ons and everything, to a young kid, you're like, hey, man, I was only a minute late, you know, cutting some slack. But to Coach Paterno, it's like, no, you're 120 minutes late because you took a minute out of 120 people's time. So when he breaks that down to you, you're like, man, I got to get my stuff together. So he has academic advisors that would have people there at your class to see if you were late to class, to see if you were studying, to see what you ate at breakfast. I mean, he was on top of it. You know, he wants you to get breakfast in the morning. He said that's the most important meal of the day. And you're looking like, man, come on. Can we play football?
And this guy, he
had all types of sayings, like a man with no watch doesn't respect time. People fumble because of lack of concentration and lack of courage. So he had all these sayings that he was saying that would just stick with you all the time. Every time he see me when I came back to work out with the team, he always be like, hey, save your money, kid. Hey, kid, how's your mom doing? How's your family? He would never talk football with me, not one time, ever.
And that was a father figure. For sure. And to teach you discipline. And at first, you're probably like, whoa. Growing up in Detroit, you know, your mom was strict, but not as much probably all of the people you grew up with and stuff like that. And saying, wow, this is football. What is he involved in all these other things, right?
Yeah. She was like, you know, my son is really becoming a man. Like, I'd be coming home and I'd be cleaning up and stuff like that. She's like, wow. I guess I did make a right choice that you're going to Penn State.
Well, I'm glad you're...
Yeah, so, but it was cool because all of the assistant coaches, they kind of followed suit. You know, you couldn't wear hats in the building. You couldn't have chin hair. Like, you had to cut your chin hair, all that type of stuff. You had to have your shirt tucked in, no excessive celebrations and all that type of stuff. Like, he didn't play all that stuff, or he wasn't going to play, or he was going to take his scholarship.
Wow. And that's
right. In other words, act like you've made that play before. Act like it is
exactly. If I had a dollar for every time he said that, I'd be a billionaire.
Well, we're talking Anthony Adams, insightful player, Chicago Bear, 49er, and much, much more. But for our listeners on our flagship station, Penn State. That's what a lot of times when we talk about it, Anthony, and it's a surprise when we get back, I'll ask that question. if you have gone to one of those major universities that are traditions with the most Hall of Fame coaches that you played under, that is going to end up being what people will call you more than the NFL, which is amazing. And that's the Notre Dames, the Alabamas, the Penn States. I hate saying that because I am a Pitt fan. But when we get back with more with Anthony Adams, you're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Insightful Player Series. Go to insightfulplayer.com, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show and the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, the Insightful Player Series. Go to insightfulplayer.com to find out more information on Chrissy Carew and her great players. And I'm with Jarrett, my co-host. And Jarrett, I know you have a question for Anthony, not regarding Penn State right now, based on your research.
I don't. And you know, our listeners know that I'm the one that always asks the really tough questions, the hard-to-answer questions. And I would only answer this – I'd only ask Anthony this question because I know his wonderful sense of humor. But, Anthony, I'm going to ask you, tell us, what is the Mama's Boy Award that you won at Martin Luther King High School back in Detroit?
Well, our categories were very specific. You know, we had, you know, class clown, class most likely to succeed, and then we had class mama's boy. That's what I won. You know, my mom would always be at the game. She would always be head of the booster club and all that type of stuff. And my mom really didn't need a megaphone at the games. I will say that. So
it was an
everybody knew who she was, and you know, I ended up running. And it was, you know, it was no competition.
So it's an award of honor, actually. I mean, you were proud of that. And thank you for that. Thank you for answering the really tough question.
Oh, Jarrett, you ask the hardest questions in the world. You check me out and hear me ask these tough questions, and you ask the toughest. All right, so back to Paterno. I think that ultimately when you talk about discipline, and this is one thing that the program brought to take in his whole time at Penn State, that you were able to really gather a lot of that for your success in the NFL and off the field is the discipline. So you didn't get caught up in a lot of the bad things that could have happened to you. You see lots of pro athletes and college athletes throw their whole lives away because they have freedom, right, Anthony? In a lot of ways, Joe allowed you to have freedom, but had that discipline there to make sure it didn't go too far.
Yeah, he was he was funny, man. Like he had you so tired that you wouldn't even think about doing anything. And he had you so spooked that you would take your scholarship. Like, he'd take your scholarship, but he wouldn't let you play. So, like, you know, you always, you know, made sure that everything was on the up and up with Coach Paterno. And we were sitting in alphabetical order. So I'm in the front, of course. And so I would just be going over, like, all these things in my head because he'd be right there at the podium. And I'm just like, man, I know he's going to talk about me being late to class. I know he's going to talk about that C I got on my final. And so I used to just be sitting there just, like, sweating bullets. Like, oh, man, I hope he doesn't look at me. I try not to make eye contact with him. But he definitely was a man who was no nonsense, and he taught a lot of players how to be men. And you know, I just respect him so much.
Wow, and that speaks a lot for people. And Anthony, I'm glad you said that because again, a lot of people have turned their backs on Paterno. I don't know how many players have, but many fans have, and many people that want to bash him. Based on what happened with Sandusky and everything, and for you to have the courage to come out still and say this, because a lot of people,
I can't do it. This is a man who came to Detroit, Michigan, who came to my high school, who went and met my pastor, who went and met my trainer, where I worked out at, like, and came into my house and said, "This is what we want to do with Anthony. We want to get him graduated first, and we want to teach him football." Like, how do you not respect a man who's going to give you a scholarship to play football but is more dedicated to you to graduate?
Yes. Yes, and that's what we need. We need to put student athlete, not athlete comes first in college football. The student comes first. And Jarrett, that's what I always preach. I said, you know, we need to have student athletes in college, not athletes.
Did you guys read the quote that Urban Meyer said about Coach Paterno?
No, I did not. Tell us about that. Share with us.
So he's the greatest college football coach in the history of college football. That's his direct quote. And, you know, I thank Urban Meyer for saying that.
Especially when many people would put him right up there as the greatest. You know, Urban Meyer is the greatest college coach. For someone like him to say what I've accomplished is small compared to what Coach Paterno has done. I mean, that is significant.
Yeah, very, very. So I commend Urban Meyer for that.
What's amazing, Anthony, is you've talked about the father figure in your life in college, Joe Paterno, and how he taught you many things that you didn't understand about being on time. You didn't understand about how to treat others and do all these different things. And you had a successful NFL career, but I think one of the honors you received, because we could talk to you for three different segments for 30 minutes each, but if we want to catch the major points of your career and your life, receiving the Ed Block Courage Award must have been a tremendous honor. Explain that reward and how it felt to be given that.
Well, yeah, it came at an awesome time. It wasn't so awesome things that were going on in my life, which got me nominated. Ed Block Courage Award is an award that your peers vote upon, a guy on your team who shows a lot of courage. So, for instance, I know a guy by the name of Tony Parrish who won the award. He played with I think he had some type of partially torn tricep or something like that. So he played the whole year with the cast on his arm or whatever. And in my case, my aunt died in preseason. We had preseason going on and training camp and all of that stuff. And my aunt died, and so I flew back home to be there for the funeral on a Friday, and we had a game on Saturday. So when I flew back home to go and bury my aunt, on the way to pick my granddad up, my granddad had a heart attack and died.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had to fly back Saturday to play a game. I guess we played against San Diego or something like that. So I flew out to San Diego, played in the game, and then came back. And then I had to do the same thing the next week. So I had to fly back on Friday to bury my granddad and then play in the game on Saturday. So the guys recognized what I went through, and they voted me for the Ed Block Courage Award.
But also, Anthony, it's not just that. Also, they look at your whole resume, am I correct?
Yeah,
meaning
right.
The kind of player you were in your career. Meaning the award is not just for courage, but also showing a lot of those characteristics as well. Correct, identifying as you're a sportsman, your sportsmanship, and you're also inspiring in ways. So, listen to Anthony. I talk about the award and because of Coach Joe Pa and what he has been able to instill in Anthony, and Anthony shows the humbleness of the reason he received the award. When there's a lot more to this, Jarrett, you got to be inspiring. You got to be a sportsman, have great sportsmanship. And those are two characteristics I guarantee the Coach Paterno, Jarrett, taught Anthony.
Yeah, well, we've heard that. You know, we've heard Anthony mention the critical role that positive adults made in his life and how he's carrying on that same legacy.
Yeah, he used to make us wear suits at away games, and I was just like, man, this is so crazy, man. Like, we already got to shave our chin hair and be so punctual all the time. Now we got to put on a suit for away games. And you look at other teams; they're wearing their windbreakers and stuff like that. I'm like, man, how come you can't just be like this other team and just wear some track suits or whatever on the bus or, you know, on the plane. So, but sure enough, I get to the NFL and they're like, hey, you guys, we have to wear suits at away games. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't get rid of this guy.
And you were, Bob, you said, I've got my suit ready. You know, you're just going to wear that same one that you've been wearing the previous 4 years.
What coach in the NFL had you wear a suit for away games? Which coach?
It was Coach Erickson and Dennis Erickson and Coach Mike Nolan and Coach Lovie Smith for sure.